Okay, so my computer runs my life and says it's 3 o'clock. As you can see, it's sort of a smallish class. Typically, I'd like you to come up sort of close because we're going to be talking about, I would wager, the stranger stuff that you'll hear about in the new class. There's some really weird stuff that we'll talk about as the course goes on. What makes it even weirder is we're going to talk about some of it with a great deal of seriousness. It is really kind of stuff. In some ways, it's good for small class. I apologize that we're in here sort of like beans in a bucket. It turns out that we have this big room back here full of physics demos, and for certain things I'll want to do demos for this class, but it's a nice idea to actually be able to do that. It turns out it came into the year and we need to do that. So we're sort of stuck with this large lecture hall. So let me tell you a bit about the class and learn a little bit more about you. It's a survey of the universe to see the modern science and exploration concepts of the multiple universe reality. The multiple universe idea is really out there these days in the media. So we run into it all the time. And even being a physicist, I had run across it. We'll talk about one form of the multiple universe, which is known as many worlds, which is one way of interpreting quantum mechanics. And I had run into that in my formal training a little bit, but you're more or less, it's just an interpretation of quantum mechanics, and it doesn't help you calculate things. So, in fact, in your formal class, you sort of learn to ignore it, and you don't worry about it, and you don't worry about it. And that's about it. And at some point, I'm a particle physicist, and we study small particles and the nature of forces and stuff. And I learned enough cosmology that I got very excited about how what we know about the very small is intersecting with the very large in cosmology. So I thought that was neat, and I thought there was a really nice story to tell. So I went to write a book that told this story for non-scientists, basically. And the publishers really had no interest in publishing. Even if they liked it, they said, but how can you tell the difference between this one and the third and the other? So we can never really do that. So I have gotten an agent, and the agent kept saying, well, you should write something about the multiverse. I'm like, I don't know about the multiverse. You should write something about multiverse. And finally, this is shutting up. It's fine. I'll look into it. And about a week later, I was totally excited about it because it turned out to be incredibly rich topic. There are many different concepts of multiple universes. Many of them are independent. Many of them could, in principle, be true simultaneously. And some of them are absolutely inferred from our best scientific theories of the day. Doesn't mean they're proven, or you can't, as you'll see as we talk about it, you can't actually step outside our universe and say, ah, see, there's our universe, here's another one. But you can have a theory that is scientifically very well supported, and if you follow it to its logical conclusion, you have more. Okay. And that we have in abundance. So that's very cool. So I call those scientific multiverses. And then you have to sort of define a multiverse and a universe. And once you do, it turns out there are others that you can think about. So I actually did decide to write that book, which I'm making you read. It's actually a very fun topic. And the reason that I sort of brought it into this class was because for years I've been teaching something called Physics 100, which actually deals with much of the same material, and I can get very excited about it, but it's entitled the Physics of the Natural World. And I kept thinking, who can put that? And so I thought this might be an interesting angle to sort of put in it. It is very similar to Physics 100, but it does have this multiple universe theme. By similar to Physics 100, I mean And we're really going to, in order to talk about the main concepts of multiverse, sorry, I typically will be using a tablet PC and a native writer, but for these slides, at some point, I made them too dark, so.
Zero to very little mathematics. It's mostly a reading class.
This is basically the description of the class. I don't know if this is any point in reading it, except I'm not expecting you to have to do that, so that's why I'm not. Occasionally, I actually get science majors in the class because we don't have to talk about most of the fun stuff in our formal physics classes. That's sort of something you make at graduate school or when you do research for some of these topics. So,
but it's really a conceptual class, and so I don't think that will change anything. So from my point of view,
because I understand that some of you could be science majors, I have to figure out who you are in a second, well, maybe we'll do that now. What's your name? Anyway, wow, this is really
because some scientist says it, it may not be true, but it may very well be worth listening to. So we'll talk about the nature of science.
I believe that human bias has played a very big role in the development of science. And one of the things that we'll be coming up to explore is how has that been a very positive role and how has it been very negative. There are certainly big instances where human gut instinct and intuition has and our biases have driven us into absolutely tremendously successful scientific advances. And then I think there are some things that where we've just been held back because of our expectations. And one example, well, I have lots of examples, I'm feeling careful about how much I'm private right now. Einstein's big advances in relativity turn out to throw away our common intuition about how space works and how time works. And it turns out to be a huge advance. And yet, the intuition you have to throw out the window is something that we really draw up with and works really well. It's very hard to accept. And it's very strange. And yet, it turns out to be a huge advance in science. So, we're going to talk about human bias and the role it plays in our world. The scientific story that I'd like to tell you really is a marriage of our understanding of the very big of our cosmology with our understanding of the very small and particle physics and quantum. And this story is actually true to me. When I was in graduate school, I had to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. And one idea would be to study cosmology in the large scope of the universe. And I consciously chose not to do that, even though I thought it was cool. Because all the measurements that were done in that area of the world, how one could imagine trying to probe the limits of the universe beyond my imagination. So I was only in particle physics, and there's a lot of particle physics that also took it beyond imagination in some ways. But there, you can, in principle, build an accelerator, turn the experiment on and off, change the characteristics of it, and study what's going on. You learn about the laboratory. Nowadays, we're actually measuring light that's coming from early stages of the universe and looking at patterns in that light, and from that inferring things about the very early universe that are just breathtaking. So they're not actually arguing about whether the Big Bang happened. They're arguing over specific mechanisms of how things sort of started, different models. That's sort of the progression in that. Really, I mean, I may have had great care, but it hasn't been that long since I was in graduate school. It's an amazing advance. In particle physics, our current knowledge sort of goes back to sort of my time in graduate school and a bit earlier, but we have what's called the Standard Model of Particle Physics. And it's sort of been in place since the 60s and 70s. And with relatively small changes, it's really driven a lot of what we have. So this is stuff that's fairly new, and one of the things that's very exciting is that these models, these cosmological models, it turns out that all of the things that we're learning about quantum processes and particles and forces that happen at very high energies at very small distances can turn out to be incredibly important in the formation of large structures. So it's really that story that I want to tell, sort of how the very big and the very small get married together into our current vision of how the universe works.
So that's the the basic science. And then within all of this, I want to tie in a number of concepts of multiple universality, just because I think it's actually very cool. And one of the interesting things I hope I can convince you of, or kind of believe, if I go into a faculty meeting today, So we have to have how the course works. I'm Steve Manley, and you can't see me yet, but I'm on my flash. I'm in Bausch & Lomb 203B. So if you come in to Bausch & Lomb on the main quad, you're on the second floor. If you just turn right and go past the stairs and through the doors and go as far as you can to the right, you'll find my office. I have sent you an email that I don't remember if I sent you this link or not. This is my own website that is controlled with a physics server, and I will use it and Blackboard. So you should all have access to Blackboard. It turns out that Blackboard is incredibly clunky, and a year from now they will have taken everything I put on Blackboard to this class and it will disappear. So it turns out that Blackboard is almost useless to me in one way, but I like to do this with stuff on archive. I like to keep all of my courses on the web so I can go back and do what I did and put all the courses that I used to do. So for that control reasons and the fact that it's easier to use, I actually will largely put things on this website. For your grades, for things that have copyright protection, they'll certainly all be on Blackboard. So you might need to. Assignments will generally be posted on this Blackboard site, so that will be most of you. We have two undergraduate TAs, Inga Koch and Christina Lanivsky, and they're here, their emails. I will be posting as well. Generally, the best way to reach me is email.
I do have to travel a bit for my work, so next week I can't go to Japan. But you can always reach me via email. If I'm in Japan, then
my response to you may come at a strange time of your day, but I do read it.
To me, this class is sort of it's about intellectual exploration. I do have some responsibility to do something with the class and to do some evaluation. So in terms of trying to make the class interesting and useful to you intellectually as part of your career here at the bar, So that's sort of the main thing about class. And so what I would like, the other thing we'll do is have recitations following. So you will need 2 hours of meat for half of your class. And I'll give you a series of questions or life problems or things to discuss with you. Some of these will be hands-on. You know, you might be actually, you know, we're trying to get the nature of the science. So there will be a couple of things that will be
The other thing I'd like to do each week is to have,
I would pose a question or a couple of questions to you that might be a little out of the blue or might have a whole lot to do with the reading of what we discuss in the class. And I would like to ask you to briefly write something about it. And you might say, how much? Well, I'm not quite sure. It depends a little on what it is. But I'm not thinking 4 pages, I'm taking a paragraph or 3 pages. give you some guidance and opportunity to think deeply about some of these things. And that's the whole point of it. So then you might ask, how does that turn into some sort of rage in class? I mean, and in particular, this kind of class, there's also drops built into the writing and the ranking. Okay, so I'm assuming there'll be 3 weeks for any of these things that you may choose not to do with no loss. So I'm assuming that you'll have your off weeks. But with that caveat, having done it, if you basically do what I ask, engage, you think, you judge, and you participate in everything, then I hope you can get an A. And I have no limit on the number of A's. This isn't a readout. You know, I understand some people are taking this class just because they need a cluster and they're not that engaged. Okay? Depending on the degree to which you don't want to be engaged, I have occasionally had a student who signed up for the class that basically wasn't in it. Don't expect a pass. If you come and you do sort of pretty minimal stuff, you know, but it's very minimal, you're not going to do as well as you do. So I owe it to you to have that degree. Sort of fuzzy, I understand, but you know, if I don't do exams with particular numbers, and we are going to have numbers, it's just since I haven't done this before, I don't really know how that translates into what I think about what it means and how much you cost. I'm going to have to read the essays and look at the scores and think about that myself. But it is completely reasonable that you could be getting poor ranking in that you may not be pulling your ideas together quite as much, or you may, you know, perhaps English is a second language or something, and so it doesn't come off quite as well. And I look at it, and you're still really pretty much thinking and engaging and putting thoughts down and doing what I'm asking you to do. And I'm fine to give you an A, even if you're sort of ranking you so low. So I have to worry a little bit about what that interpretation is. And it may be as we get in the middle of the class, have a talk with some of you about how to interpret it, because I don't even know yet. Any questions on that? So I hope it just turns out to be fun. I think I wrote the syllabus carefully. I reserved the right to switch systems. If this one really isn't working, we'll talk about it. I mean, I have it in this class where we actually have, you know, the term and final, and we're not going to do mathematical finish here. It's very conceptual. So that's the short answer. So it works okay, but you know, it's a different sort of thing, and maybe you should do that. I prefer not to do that in this class, but I really want to focus on the discussion and the reading and just having fun with it.
So recitations will begin next week. One thing that came up, I realized when the class. Class of this size, it makes no sense to have four presentations for a lot of reasons. We need to have more people in for the discussion. So I have to convince them too. I did a doodle poll. I appreciate all those who participated. And out of that doodle poll, it turned out between that and TA constraints, there was only one solution. And that solution is going to be these will be the two sections. When I looked at people who preferred one of these two times, there were a few people, I think there were two or three people. Really didn't want either of these times, they said they could do it, and sorry, you're sort of stuck. These other sections are going to be canceled, so if you're officially signed up for one of the other sections, just go ahead and change. That's why I'm going to have to shut down just a second. I hope that works. We don't have classes coming Monday, because Martin is a pain day. A week from now, on Wednesday, January 22nd, we have a scheduled lecture, but I'll be in Japan. So I'm going to post a lecture, slides, and an MP3.
sign up for one, because the registrar wants to have some place where they think you are, and that's fine. They also want caps. I mean, if everybody, if for some reason, you know, 18 of you are preferring to go to one and not the other, then they have to talk about it. It takes 15 months to keep the size about even. But by and large, it looks to me that it's going to break down roughly half and half for your just basic preferences from your schedule. And if in a given week, you know, you can't make your usual, go to the other one, don't worry about it.
So let me actually ask you. I mean, we're going to do these writings once a week.
I need to think about how the synchronization works. You have two pieces to it. I'd like you to sort of use your writing. Again, I hope it's not a three-day process. It's not going to be all that long. But you do yours. You'll send it to us. We'll need a little time to pull it all together into a file. And then we'll send it back to you. And then you need to read three or four of them.
So I'll think about that and we'll come up with something. That we just talked about. All right. So any questions on how the course is going to run? It to work in the end, but yeah, clearly at the start too. If you want to send email, we'll figure it out. Oops. Okay. All right.
So, of course, the vision is the multiple. What's the meaning?
if you just look it up, not that Wikipedia commonly defined as the totality of existence, including planets, stars, galaxies, intergalactic space, matter, and energy, even gives a side. Dictionary says the totality of known or supposed objects and phenomena throughout space, the cosmos, macrocosm, the whole world, a world or sphere of which something exists or prevails. Okay, that's more number one that we're thinking about. Okay, so the problem with this is it really does seem oxymoronic. It's an enclosed everything. So I think I'm going to change the definition a little bit. If you truly say the universe is everything, I don't see how you can have a multiple universe. And I'm not sure how you can define everything. This is actually a limitation. does that fit this definition? And it almost does, but we do infer aspects of its existence through its interaction on things that we can't observe. So, when I was writing this book, I actually almost called it a pseudo-multiverse. Formally, with this definition, dark matter and dark energy, I think, actually are part of our universe. We'll talk a lot more about that. Wow, that's a good question. No, actually, we have a lot of things that don't now. Well, neutrinos. Okay, so we have to be causally connected to it. And so I understand you can't read this stuff. So I just wanted to give you a sense of it. So then you might ask, is there room for a multiple universe reality, since we've just sort of defined what we mean by universe? And it sounds pretty all common. Anything we could have or ever will have any causal experience with it has to be part of the reality. So a cosmologist at MIT, Max Tegmark, has a taxonomy of multiverses. And in level one, so I'm just going to say a lot of stuff right now. It's actually a lot of what we're talking about throughout the course. I understand what it's done, and I'll give you a sense of what's coming. We have lots of evidence that we've driven and expanded the universe. It turns out, to make that theory work really well, at the very early stages of it, there has to be a really fast, faster than light, massively large expansion of the universe, which is called, of what became our universe, which is called inflation. And that expansion, in principle, keeps happening, but since it's happening faster than the speed of light, if you look at part of the universe that became, that we're causally connected to, which turns out is limited by the speed of light, it is in principle much smaller than the reality that has to be created when the star is inflation. So the fact is, our current cosmology has our observable and potentially observable universe being a piece of a much larger reality that we never actually call it a connection. But this reality, a lot of the reality that we just talked about, may never be, it's so far away, it will never be in conflict with any good, but the rules of how things work are the same as the rules here, like the basic characteristics of the space-time that drives what the physical laws are, is shared. Okay? So that's level one. Level two is, if you have this inflating space-time, which is a pretty weird thing that we'll talk a lot about, but it is, there's no way to make it stop except at individual points where we have what we call quantum fluctuations, the characteristics of the space-time that change at individual points. And then from that, you may get this inflation slowing down. And that would be sort of the birth of a region of space that might be similar to what we've been in. But that can happen in multiple places in this years of place reality. And the space-time that precedes those could be quite different. So in this strange picture, we actually have sort of our observable universe embedded in a region of space that is very similar to it that we'll never touch. Then that's sort of a bubble in a foam of expanding space-time, expanding vastly faster than the speed of light. And here and there, you get another fluctuation that causes something similar to our universe. But because these fluctuations are different, you could actually have different physical laws than you do your thing. And you can argue that this shrinking bubble multiverse that is continually expanding has always been there and will always be there. You need an argument that comes from us with a lot of really strange ideas. That's what he calls level two. In quantum mechanics,
mechanics, it turns out that in Newtonian classical physics, it's a very deterministic world. I shoot a cannon, I can calculate where that shell is going to be. Because I know how things react with respect to forces, if I can input into a giant computer where every particle is in the universe, the forces that are on it and its current direction and motion, I can take that computer and calculate what the universe will be like in 20 minutes from now. That's classical physics. It turns out that the universe doesn't seem awful that way. If we go to the very small, it turns out that particles that seem like beings or particles in the classical world have wave-like characteristics, and every phenomenon that happens turns out to have a number of different possibilities. So there's a lot of fuzziness that comes in when you start looking at particles as waves, and this is the field of quantum mechanics. And in quantum mechanics, if I have something like a nucleus that can decay or not decay, or I can't actually ever predict when that nucleus will decay. I can only tell you if I have 1,000 of them, how many of them will decay in a certain time. So you all of a sudden go from this deterministic point of view to a very probabilistic point of view. And it throws out sort of this whole deterministic idea of the universe. And now it becomes very indeterministic. And that's very strange. It turns out that there is that when you so now, for example, I can have a particle which is represented by a wave hitting a sheet of film, and it actually will have some probability, which I could describe as some Gaussian curve, of interacting anywhere along this film in an optical substrate. So we'll talk about that. But in the end, that light interacts at one point, say one dark spot. And I have no idea what this probability distribution is unless I do a million of them, and then I'll see the intensity happening as well. But an individual photon has a probability to interact with anywhere along the film, and it does at one point. It turns out that mathematically, you describe that by carrying its full probability up to the point where that happens, and that probability collapses. And that turns out to pose all sorts of problems for philosophically and physically, because this collapse is basically backwards to the light. It's a thing that you often sort of break down when you do that. So there is a way to think about quantum mechanics that turns out to work very well. And what it says is that quantum mechanically, when you process, you may have a probability of something happening this way, and in the real world, we look at it, we will only see one of those things happen. But this interpretation of quantum mechanics says that any quantum mechanical event happens, all of the possibilities actually happen. It's just you're in a thread of the universe where you can only see one. And so you actually end up with this picture having a much bigger distribution of possibilities of which we only occupy that one. So you get this weird view that basically every time a quantum process happens, it's as if the universe looks in a different thread. That is a form of the concept. It's also driven by science. It's called many worlds.
So we'll have to talk a lot about that. As you can tell,
we're sort of here. So we can begin to see why we have to do a lot of background before we get into some of these. And then probably the weirdest one is Max's level 4, where he basically says if we have a theory of everything, it has to describe everything and be unambiguous. It can't carry any baggage like English around with it. So it has to be mathematics, because that is another ambiguous and self-enclosed language. And there has to be a one-to-one correspondence between that theory of everything and reality, because if it weren't,
So that is Max Tegmark's. So that, I hope, gives you some sense of the craziness we're going through. I'll talk more about this stuff on the lecture for next Wednesday. I'll just mention Max very much has different levels of complexity as his, the thing that separates his different levels in his taxonomy. To me, I like to think about it as taking our definition of the universe and then asking what can lie outside of that. And one of the interesting things I began into when I started, and I remember sitting there really long talk, our concept of heaven and hell sort of fits the multiverse idea if you say that our universe. Have this idea of these realities potentially that heaven and hell, we can't be possibly connected. And so I thought, oh my God. But that's a very different thing. We have this scientific theory that really says those things exist. So this idea of different planes of existence is some sort of strange idea, which sort of fits what I was defining as a multiverse, but it is really very different in some ways. So when you go through and you look at a lot of the ideas people have had, many of them are scientific, so this is mostly what we're going to talk about. And when I say scientific, I would say these are things that are testable or are inferred from current theory. And then we have then we have this multiverse of fate, is the one I was told about. There is this idea that people have, which if you read the secret we wrote about, it's like, I want a golden necklace, and if I sit and I think about myself, and visualize myself, and I have faith in the fact that I'll have this golden necklace, that golden necklace. You ever read that? Man, it's a multi-million dollar dress that is called the secret. We'll talk a little bit about it. It's a completely wacky idea. And it actually comes out of this whole quantum mechanical multiverse idea in a very strange backhand way. But the idea is that these quantum mechanical wave functions or probabilities collapse when you make an observation. So the idea that maybe the trick is not, maybe the trick is that you observe it. So somehow mind gets connected with reality. And so then the idea is that perhaps by thinking certain ways, it's really out there, and if you have anybody trying to sell you that, don't buy it. Okay, so we'll talk a lot more about some of these ideas as we go. Some of what we're going to learn about that seems so weird
really comes about because we now are able to push into regimes that are well outside of what was necessary for us to call. So things can go much faster than we're used to dealing with. Maybe some strange things in relativity. If we look at things that are really, really small, it turns out that things that we sort of think of as particles are new ways in the entire physics. And even the quantum mechanics and quantum mechanics is strange because of that. So there's a lot of weirdness with that. The other piece that we're going to look at is it turns out that the reality that we're used to experiencing every day can be awfully weird if you look at it carefully. So let me just give you one example. I have a common bicycle wheel that can spin. Okay? If I take this bicycle wheel and I hold it on the axis by both sides, what's going to happen if I remove my left hand? I'm going to do that. Totally what you expect. Now I take the same thing.
And expect an email or two about when things are due or how we're going to do it. So, anyway, see ya.